Welcome back to the podcast. Gabe, Giannis, and I were back on the mic for our weekly episode, or actually it's kind of a bi-weekly episode because we had some great guests on recently. We just had Josh Bridges. We had John McCaskill. We had Matt Boudreau. If you have not checked on those episodes, make sure to go back, give those a check out because there's a ton of value that these guys added. But Gabe and I, we're back on the mic. We're riffing. We're getting after it and talking about the things that are on our mind for this upcoming week. So what's going on, Gabe? Good morning.
Good morning, man. I mean, if you haven't watched the podcast on YouTube, this one might be worth just clicking in really quick.
Just for my background.
Just for my new background, because I worked very hard on it and I'm very proud. But no, so we've had this like little casita, like little guest house since we moved on. And it moved on to this property 2.5 years ago. And it was set up as like a little guest house. It has a bathroom and it had like this like bed that they like kind of rigged out of pallets. So it was literally like, it looked cool. It looked rustic, but it was just stacked pallets, a mattress. And it was like a fine space. We had some people stay here. My sister actually lived here for a few months when she first moved out to Texas. But in the freeze this last winter, we had a pipe burst.
The freeze. Dude, you don't have the freeze in California, but yeah. Dude,
in Texas, for the past 2 years, it's been brutal because it's literally just a week of below freezing weather, but the houses like aren't made for it. They're just not ready for that cold. So there isn't the same level of insulation that you have like in the Northeast. Like I'm originally from New York. Anyway, that side story apart, we had a pipe burst and the bathroom in here got like completely destroyed because we didn't notice that it burst because we weren't using it anymore. One day we were leaving and our carport is right next to the little guest house. And Ariel goes, "Is that running water?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I guess it does sound like running water." And we come inside and it's literally like the pipe had burst and it's been running for, I don't know, probably 24 hours. So you can imagine the mess that was in here.
Luckily, in the water bill, dude.
Dude. Well, more of an electric bill because we're on well water. But anyway, the insurance covered like drying everything out and we caught it soon enough that like they were able to dry everything out, but they weren't going to cover like actually rebuilding the wall that they took down and all the insulation they had to pull out, so on and so forth. So long story short, it just became one of those things that's like, we'll take care of it later. So this has been sitting just empty for a while and finally like took the time to like set it up. The bathroom still isn't finished, but it ends up being like a perfect background for a podcast. And it's my office now, which is, I had mentioned this to you, is a little bittersweet. I had to move out. So before I was working out of our living room, which was great because I was always around Ariel and Shay, our new boy, but he's 9 months now. And dude, he's crawling. He's not taking naps all day. Like he's moving around. He's playing, he's screaming, he's doing all these things. And like, it's not fair to them. And it's also like not a good work environment for me to be like, "Hey, I'm on a podcast. Like I need you guys for the next hour to either be in the bedroom, go outside, or like keep it down." So all those reasons, I'm in the guest house. I set it up. I love the space and all an excuse to get you to go to YouTube and watch the video of this really quick so you can see what I'm talking about.
Dude, so his background is like an American flag, a bull skull. Is that a bull skull?
It's a cow skull.
Cow skull, but it looks badass. And then just like a wood block wall. And then we got the good mics going. So hopefully you guys are hearing the audio quality enhance every single week. That's the goal. But I think we're at a good point now. I am, you know, back to what you were saying about being in the family room, you know, something that I think, you know, I relate to is this idea that I used to be in a position where I'd be on calls or conference calls or whatever it is, especially during COVID. Dude, during COVID, I was in like a little condo. It was rough, but it was rough compared to previous circumstances. But I guarantee you that many people had it way worse. I should clarify that.
I was about to say, it definitely wasn't a little condo.
In either case. Yeah. But dude, the thing about it is like, you know, it's shame on me if I'm there like shushing and like trying to keep, like they need to live their life too, man. And I need to make sure that I'm putting myself in a position for success where I could focus, pay attention, but also not inhibit their day, you know? And it's not fair. I've been in situations and I'm trying to be more aware of this because you brought it up where, you know, you got to set yourself up for success with the family. Meaning like if you're out there and you're setting up calls when you know you're going to be around them or whatever, and they need to be like quiet. Yeah. Every now and then that works, but I would try and avoid that if you can, because it kind of shows that you're not prioritizing their experience or their time because you're making them have to work around you. And I think that happens sometimes and it's all good. It's just, if it happens more times than not, we're taking these calls at not opportune times where the kids are at school or whatever's going on. And they need to kind of like sacrifice what's going on with them or talk really quiet or whisper. I just don't think it's as fair. So just being aware of it, I think, is important.
Yeah. And I think it speaks to the challenges of this new like work from home, remote work life that we're in, right? Because like you said, I think, you know, we're both fortunate that we do have a separate space that we can go into. I didn't before, but I did now. It just took some work to setting it up. But now, you know, I'm here and like, I don't have anything to worry about. And I know a lot of people might not have those circumstances. Like you kind of like, hey, if I'm working from home, I have to be in the living room and you just have to navigate that. But it does come back to, I think that like having boundaries and to your point and what we talked about last time, me and you recorded the AMRAP mentality and making sure that like, hey, it's not family time and work time. There's work time. And that's when you're focused, you're deep diving, you're present into what you need to do for work. And then family time is family time, right? Like if I'm around Shay and Ariel now, like I'm around Shay and Ariel, which before there was this blurred line of like, hey, I might hear my computer go off and it's a Slack that came through or an email that came through. And I might literally, if I'm like in the living room, just playing around with him on the floor, I might be like, oh, let me go just check on that really quick. Whereas now I just can't do that because my desk is no longer in that space. Yes, that means that there's more quote unquote time that I'm not like literally next to them, but was I really being present just being in the same room as them if my mind is actually like immersed in the work that I'm doing? So I think it ends up being a win-win. I'm excited. Space is super cool. And
the space is legit. And you know, back to what you're saying, like one of the things that I really had to hit home, and I think some people are listening right now. They're going to, I hate the word trigger because it's like a, it's a negative connotation, but it's like, they'll be, I don't know, awakened or revitalized or whatever the word is. But like, I would get home from work a lot of days and I would be on calls. And especially when we were doing a lot of work with Asia, I'd be on a lot of calls later in the day. It just was the way it was because it was their morning. And
yeah, because the time difference.
Yeah. And I'd get home from the gym and I'd be on the phone in the car. And I did a really bad job for a really long time where I would still be on the call and I would walk into the house. I wouldn't want to sit there in my car for that long. And it just, it wasn't a good look because what happened was I would walk in the door. This is when the kids were younger. Now I haven't done it for a lot of years, but I'd walk in the door. Kids would want to come and say, what's up, right? Say hi to dad. Cause he gets home from work. And I would be like, shh, you know, I'm on a call. And it just, I really had to reflect on that and be like, that's not the right way to engage with the kids. Like, because at that point I'm kind of putting them second to the call. I'm not really as focused on the call because the kids are coming up to me and then I'll just run up to the room. And then the kids are like, dude, how many times do I do that before the kids are like, I'm not even going to come up to dad anymore. So instead I learned a valuable lesson pretty early on with that kind of stuff. I had to reflect on it. And so I would either just stay in the car and finish the call. Well, that's the only option. So I would just stay in the car and finish the call or finish the call when I was at the office. But that was just like a little takeaway I'd give to any parent out there. That like, if you're finding yourself coming home from an environment or even leaving your office in the house and going downstairs and you're still on calls and stuff, it is unfortunate when the kids want to engage with you and you're like, shh, 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 shh. Big takeaway for me that I had to really reflect on. So anyways, trigger's not the right word on that. You know what I mean? Like,
No. let me ask you a question though. Is there a necessity for being an entrepreneur, which is what you were, right? Like what you still are, obviously, like being an entrepreneur that's trying to build something special. Is there a necessity though, to skew more towards work than family in specific seasons of your life? Like, do you have any regrets of the time that you spent, you know, not necessarily leaving work at work and continuing to do, you know, the calls and the laying the groundwork for what, you know, was a big deal in NC Fit's history? Is that necessary, or is there a world where you can still be a hard charging entrepreneur and have the balance from day one?
You know, I think that, I mean, that's a great question. I think now the kids are older, this idea of like work-life balance, it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting topic. I think that for me, I try and pull the kids into more work type stuff. So I'll engage them on conversations of what we have going on at the organization so that they could feel like they know what's going on. And I try and bring them into the gyms. I try and bring them into the garage. I try and embody that with them instead of like separates. But yeah, I mean, dude, like, look, at any point in people's lives, I mean, they'll probably look back and say, hey, I maybe could have balanced things better. But I think for me, over all the years, I think I've done the best I could. And I think right now is the most blended I've ever been. But yeah, each person's going to have to come and have their own adjustments. Like, especially when I was traveling to Asia a lot. I mean, dude, I travel a lot now as it is. It's just my travel is a lot different. My travel's like local US, couple days, boom, right back. And when I get back, I really try and prioritize spending time with the family and going to sports. But I guess my answer to that would be, not the kids are getting older. I'm trying to do a better job of pulling them in on what I'm actually doing. So it's not so much like there's work and there's family. It's kind of just like one thing. Like Ashley's coming with me, for example, to Texas in a few days. Like that's an example where I could bring her and I could still prioritize time with her and get work done at the same time. So I guess that's the blend. It's yeah. Just balance, bro. It's not, that's never going to be perfect, man. Anybody who says it's perfect, they're full of shit.
100%. You know, I think that one thing that you have embodied, at least me, for the time that I've known you and what I know about you before we met, I think that one thing that you've embodied really well, and I wrote this down, I forget where I heard it, but I wrote this down, and I think you did this to a T, whether you did it intentionally or not. But I think that this would be the key takeaway to anyone that has that question of like, how do you balance like family and work? I think that there's seasons in your life, like you should work hard during seasons in your life that they won't necessarily remember, so that you can have the freedom to be more present during the years that they won't forget. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that, like that wording so powerfully, because like, yes, I have a 9-month-old, and I'm not saying that he's not acknowledging whether I'm there or present or not. Like, kids are sponges from day one. I get that. But I think that there is an acknowledgement of like, hey, if you're a young parent, like you have really young kids, like they're only going to require or benefit from more and more of your time and attention as they get older. So front loading, like building your career, building your business, building your fitness, building all these things, like doing as much as you can now, so that all you have to do is maintain later during those years where they literally won't forget. They're not going to forget if you showed up to their little league game, if you were at, you know, their big recital during high school. Like those things are going to be huge. Whether you spend, you know, an extra hour now rolling around on the floor, like playing with the Montessori toys, like, yes, that's important. There's value there. But I think that also acknowledging, because like you said, it's not perfect and everything's a balance, acknowledging that there is a little bit more flexibility. And that's something that I think about a lot now, because, you know, going back to like programming flex and like, you know, this like obsession, if you want to call now, and getting as jacked as possible in my 30s. The reason I'm doing that is because like, I'm only going to have less time to do that as he gets older. Period. Like yeah, right no, now,
true.
Right now, it's the most time I have to get plenty of sleep, eat the right foods, train super freaking hard, put on a bunch of muscle, like cut when I need to, like all these things, right? Like even dieting, like to go into a cut, like that's going to be harder when he wants to like eat all these foods, or like, hey, dad, can we get this? Or like there's foods for him. Like right now is the easiest time for me to do this. So I need to go all in 150% and like get that done now, so that, you know, the times he'll never forget, I can be present. And that's not something that I'm worried about. I'm not worried about putting on muscle when I'm like, you know, in my late 30s and 40s and he's 10. I'm trying to focus on that now when he's 9 months old.
Hey, dude, I'm trying to put on muscle for life, but.
Oh, dude, yeah, I get it. But you know
travel,
what I mean?
Yeah. And travel comes into play, dude. So like, you know, now like I said, I used to travel a lot. I used to travel a lot with Ashley, and we don't travel as much anymore, because also it's really difficult with the kids. Like, dude, the kids used to go to the grandparents. It was no big deal. Now it's like, the kids want to be with us. They want to go explore these places, and I feel bad traveling without them. So that's another factor to consider. Mm. Is like, get in some travel, get in some grit and hard work early, especially with kids, because it gets harder and harder. I guarantee you, anybody that's listening with like older kids, like, you know, my kids, like I said, are 9 and 12. I guarantee you, they're like, yeah, dude, I've been there. So that's the inspiration, man. It's like, I don't know. Look, the whole parenting thing, obviously there's always ebbs and flows and there's ways to learn. But I think for me, it's like, those are two things I've noticed. Like you said, early on, you can grind a little bit more because they don't notice as much. But then again, as they get older, they could also hold you accountable to keep a better balance. Like, so like, for example, like if I'm at home There is no downtime in our house. Like, it just doesn't exist. Like, there is no downtime because the kids always want to go do something. So you're either working or you're with them doing something, and they hold you accountable to go do things because you're like, dude, let's go do this. Let's do this. So there's the pros and cons, man, but it's, you know, I not to switch gears, but I will add this note. Did you see the post that, Tim Kennedy put up about the woman who is sprinting away from a van?
Or yes. A bus? Yeah. Yeah. I saw that.
Bro, if you guys are listening to this and you did not see this video, there's this woman who has like a, maybe a, I don't know, 6 month old baby.
It was a baby. Yeah.
And this giant, like, I don't know, what do you call it? It was like a
giant semi-truck. Yeah. Yeah.
Just pummels out of nowhere, dude. Just knocks these cars out. And this woman just sprints for her life and her child's like out of the way. And it was a really good visual example. Like, I've seen other ones, like where, you know, like that one with the shopping cart with the baby in it that was going towards the street. And we've seen other ones, but this one in particular hit home. Because literally it was one factor that helped her save her life and her baby's life. And that was her speed, period. Like, it was just her ability to run. And, you know, from a self-defense perspective, I think that's a major, major factor too. You know, something I work with Ava a lot is grip break, get away, push and run. And you better hope that you're going to be faster than the assailant, than another person. In this case, like, her ability to sprint and run saved her life. And that's powerful stuff to inspire you to stay fit.
Yeah, dude. And I'm glad you brought that up because I remember that on the podcast, we also talked about, you know, that video that was kind of making the rounds of the lady that literally couldn't get up.
The one that fell.
To grab it. Grandma. And I think that it's good because sometimes like the bad scenarios in a lot of things in life get like a lot of traction and everyone talks about it. But the fact that this was the opposite end of the spectrum, right? Like literally the epitome of the positive, the epitome of like, hey, I was fit enough. I was able enough to like save my kid's life and my own life. I'm glad that we brought that up because it's important that that stuff gets just as much recognition as, you know, the fact that we bash the other side of it, which is also important to maybe not bash, but like, you know, bring attention to and criticize and highlight. But it's also important to highlight the fact that like some people are taking care of themselves. Some people are putting the work in to make sure that they're fit enough to like act when it comes time to act. And that's pretty fucking cool.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like we just got back from Camp Pendleton and, you know,
we're
part of Customs and Border Protection, SRT. And this is their special response team. And if you listen to the John McCaskill podcast we released, that was a good example of some of the stuff that we're putting out for some of our organization. We work the fitness with them. Anyways, we're out there and we are participating in the PT test. And these guys are fit, man. These guys were hard chargers. These are the guys that if you needed help and you called on them, these would be the guys that you'd be down to have come and support you. And I think that on a much different level, this woman who was able to sprint is a really good example of what we could do as civilians to put ourselves in the best position to, you know, we talk about protectors. That's not just like getting in a fight, right? That's not just using a gun. That's not necessarily what we're talking about. Although I am going and training with Jacob Heppner today with the FBI, which is gonna be cool. But anyways, those aren't what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that as a protector, you got to be able to lift, you have to be able to run, you have to be able to sprint, you have to be able to climb, you have to be able to jump. Those things are all valuable. And I think that that was a good example of it. And we witnessed this at CBP too, right?
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. That was a fun event, man. Tested me in ways that haven't been tested in a long time, especially because, I mean, I haven't been running at all. But it was fun, man. It was fun. And I think it was, at least for me, and I'm curious what your take was, like pleasantly surprising how it all went down, especially because like, honestly, my training now has been exclusively Flex. So if you guys have been following Flex, like that's what I do every single day, especially now because I'm testing every single day that goes out in that program. That's like, so you guys can know exactly what I'm doing for training. And there's like some optional, like long aerobic stuff, but not really doing any high intensity stuff. I'm not really doing any like, you know, CrossFit per se, intervals. There's some intervals that I'm programming in for October, which I'm excited about, but it's really just like strength, bodybuilding, core, strength, bodybuilding, core. So it was cool, man. It was fun.
So the test that we did, in case you missed it, if you're not following me on social media, I put a few of them up at Jason Cleep. But anyways, it was strict pull-ups, push-ups, vertical jump, like this agility test, 1.5 mile run, 300 meter sprint, and then a bunch of like specific stuff that was a little bit more specific to them. So like you'd, you know, carry a ruck, carry a kettlebell, drag a dummy, you know, sling over like a, you know, basically a sim rifle and be able to go do stuff with it, bear crawl, whatever. So a bunch of tests over 2 days. And it was pretty grueling, man. Like day two was like hitting Fran back to back to back. But day one was very much so more physical.
Day two was literally, that was a good description. Day two was, I mean, maybe not as terrible as Fran for someone like you or me, who's like competent in those movements. Cause Fran is one of those workouts where the more competent you are, the more you can mess yourself up. But it was, yeah, very Fran-like effort four times in a day with like, what would you say? Like an hour rest in between, like an hour yeah. and a half.
Yeah. An hour and a half. But the day one was cool because we start off with vertical jump and
Jay's got hops. Jay has got some hops. Look at him. He's blushing. If you're on the YouTube, Jason Kalipa is blushing because of his hops.
I did win the vertical jump. I'm just acknowledging it here. What was cool for me to see across the 2 days of tests is that, you know, I like to think that I do more GPP style training, right? I get after it. In particular, I do like some strength based and I do some flex type stuff and I do a lot of EMOMs. And obviously I roll a jiu-jitsu, but it was nice to see the carryover for me for a PT test that was a little bit like broad, right? Yeah, a little bit shorter time domains, except for the 1.5 mile run. That was a little bit longer. That sucked. But aside from that, it was nice to see that across all these events, how I was able to personally perform and how you were able to perform, and Emily and Frankie, dude. Like, I mean, honestly, it's nice to see that our programs have a direct correlation to a PT test for a special response team and how we're able to, you know, we're able to hang for sure.
Yeah. I think more than be able to hang, if I'm not mistaken, I would say that, you know, you were obviously like top three. I don't think you were ever outside of top three for every single event, which that's a huge testament. And I think that, you know, myself, Frankie and Emily a little bit different because, you know, she was the first woman to ever go through, especially the day two stuff. And all of the tests were exactly the same for women and men. There wasn't like a women's version or a women's rep count. So for her, it was a little bit different because obviously she wasn't like top of the pack, but like, I would say she could hang. And I think everyone was surprised because she was a woman. And then for me and Frankie, like, I don't think we were necessarily middle of the pack. I think we were high end middle of the pack, depending on the event. So yeah, that was a little cool. I just want to make sure that you're not selling us short here.
Yeah. High end, middle of the pack. Yes, I did. I did do pretty good on the events. But Emily, dude, Emily crushed it. Yeah, she was. So for those of you who are coaches and owners who, you know, are part of the NC Fit Collective, those session plans, those programming, one of the major contributors on there, her name is Emily. And Emily came out and she threw down, dude. She did. Her movement was, in my opinion, too pretty. Like, I had to tell her, like, hey, man, like, you might want to get away with a little bit more. Like, she did 12 strict pull-ups in a row that were just, like flawless. Like, if she had done them up against the wall, they would have been perfect. Like, yeah. No kip, no nothing. And
she does everything like she's doing a movement demo video for us.
That's exactly what, which
is why, like, she's... You see her a lot in our movement demo videos because that's just how she moves. Like, yeah. If me and you are like filming movement demo videos, first of all, I'm probably not demoing too much. And if you are, you're moving very differently than what you do when you work out, like very different. There's like Jason demoing and then Jason racing the clock and it looks like two different athletes. But yeah, Emily is the same every single time.
Did you know what's funny about that is, so I tell Gabe, I'm like, hey man, we're going into their home because for these guys, it was like a part of their job. So like, I was really adamant that like, I don't want to get in the way of these guys and their training because, you know, we're doing this as a test so we could report back and give some ideas on ways that maybe it could be improved. These guys are doing this as a part of their job description. So we go in there day one and kind of like, I try and like take a step back and blah, 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 blah. After day one, I get a little bit more comfortable with these guys. So day two,
but don't cut the story short. Like, you gave us a like whole talk in the car about how like
I gave myself a talk.
We gotta stay out of their way. Like, we gotta be flies on the wall. Like, yeah. They gotta like not even be able to tell that we're there. And then go ahead. That was day one.
So day one, I really tried. The 1.5 mile run was kind of hard to like. I was trying to be aware, anyways, because these guys had to do the 1.5 mile run in under 11 minutes. to pass their qualification for their annual test. Now, normally you'd be like, dude, 11 minutes, that's not crazy. But we ended up doing this at the end of the day. So you'd already done max sit-ups in 2 minutes, max pull-ups, push-ups. You'd already done shuttle sprints. You've already done all this other stuff. So it was in particular the sit-ups that I think taxed. Then this 1.5 mile run, you had to go a little bit uphill and you're at Camp Pendleton. So it was like 95 degrees. So it wasn't
That's what I was going to say. We did that probably around noon. So it was like midday sun. Like it was the hottest that it was. Didn't they like change the, what was the color code thing? Because yeah, they did that right before we did the mile and a half run.
So they have flags and like, I think if it was green, yellow, and red, I think green is like, you're good to go for PT. Yellow is you can only PT for 45 minutes or less. And then I think red is like, it's off limits. You cannot do any type of physical training outside.
And they just switched it from green to yellow right before we did the mile and a half run.
Yeah, which was fine. Because none of us were going to take 45 minutes, but so day two comes around and this is where I guess for me, a big takeaway I had was like fitness for job specific versus fitness to try and win fitness. So in my career as a CrossFit Games competitor, when an event comes up, I'm thinking to myself, how do I basically do this as easily as possible within the rules of the expectation? So for example, if it's a toe to bar, if I'm taking my toes to the bar and I'm putting them behind the bar on the bottom, I'm going to try and do that as efficiently and as whatever as possible, as long as I'm within the rule set. Take a thruster. If it's crease to the hip below the knee joint and lockout overhead, I'm going to try and do that as within the rule book. But what I wouldn't do in a thruster is take my butt and try and touch the floor and then hold a pause overhead for longer than I need to. I would just do the standard and move on, just like everybody else should. Well, the standard for the kettlebell, one of the events, the 400 meter run with the ruck, 400 meter run with the kettlebell. And they were trying to simulate a gurney carry. What do you call those things?
They had it at the games 1 year. It's not a gurney, but the word's like on the tip of my tongue, but it's the flatbed that you would take an injured person out of, like four people, one on each corner.
Yeah. And so, anyways, it's mistake. Yeah. So they wanted to mimic that. And I understood that was the goal. The goal was to mimic this kind of carrying position with a team of four. So they gave you like a 40 pound kettlebell, which wasn't crazy, to represent like a 200 pound person if they're on this type of like, you know, unit. And I asked, I said, hey, can you carry the kettlebell however you want? And the guy's like, yes. And then I was like, okay. So then I went up to him. I was like, hey, I just want to show you the way I would do the kettlebell. And so I showed him and I drifted my hand through the handle, went back underneath it and held it, like almost cradled it. And I asked the guy, I was like, hey, can we do it this way? He's like, he thought about it for me. He's like, I've never seen that before. No, you can't do it that way. And it was a good, first off, to Gabe's point, I kind of felt bad because I did show the guys, because what happened was I was going to do it that way. And I didn't want to win the event by cheating, by going around. So I wanted to let the rest of the guys know this was the technique I was going to incorporate. And then the head judge was like, no, you can't do that. But what was interesting for me is that the way I looked at that event was, how do I do this work with the least amount of effort possible, versus the way they were looking at it, how do I do this event while taxing a system that's going to be taxed in real life for the job? And that was a big takeaway for me. Not to mention, I probably should just not said anything and just not, I should just grab it by the handle, but I couldn't get out of the competition mindset, bro. I was trying to win.
Went from fly on the wall to, hey, everyone, look at this new way to carry this kettlebell.
Innovation. Innovation.
It took 24 hours.
I know, it took 24 hours.
Let me ask you a question, though, on that note. It's, you know, I think a lot of people listening, and obviously you and me, come from, you know, a CrossFit training background. And for some of us, you know, that was a huge positive in that, like, there's always that competitive aspect, right? Like, that's what pushes you. What pushes you is the fact that, like, whether you're going to like put the score down on like a sugar watt app or a leaderboard, or just knowing that like, this was my time, has allowed people to push in ways where like, it was very difficult to do if you're just going to the gym and hitting, you know, chest and tries.
Yeah.
With that said, where do you get to the point where having that mentality of constantly, just like you said, like doing the work with the least amount of effort possible, starts being, you know, counterproductive to this goal of, how do I be most prepared when shit hits the fan? You know, and like, how do you strike that balance?
It's such a great question. It is such a great question. It's been something I've been reflecting on a lot because my mindset has always been,
sure,
make things as easy as possible. Like double unders is the best example. When's the last time you intentionally wanted to have a heavier, tougher rope? Never, right? But if the goal is to develop form, strength, connect the brain with the body, whatever, like, why wouldn't you want a heavier rope? Or if the goal is to work full range of motion of the joints, why would you try and skimp the range? And these are things that I'm thinking about a lot, right? Like, or if the goal is to develop lat strength, why would you intentionally try and incorporate more muscles than what you're really trying to focus on for that particular event, right? So it is something I think about a lot because my head has been so focused on get the job task done, not so much stimulate that particular, you know, muscle or stimulate that particular range of motion. And I think I'm having to kind of like reframe the way I look at training. It's the same thing like in jujitsu. The better you get at jujitsu, in general, your technique gets so much better that it doesn't require as much strength conditioning. But then you need to go out and identify ways to improve your strength conditioning. But the same thing goes for strength conditioning. If you're spending so much time trying to skirt the line to just get a score on the board, are you really optimizing your strength conditioning that way? It's something I'm deeply reflecting on right now. You know, like, you know what I mean? It's
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, for me, it's kind of one of the reasons why I've like literally like very deeply fallen in love with bodybuilding style training, because I've always been a competitor. I've always wanted to win. And for me, that was a big reason why I was so drawn to CrossFit. And for a long time, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, like literally where I ranked on the SugarWad leaderboard of my gym back on Long Island would dictate my mood and how I felt about myself for that day. Like literally it would have a huge impact on like how I just felt that I did, like how I felt that like all my work is culminating to like, you know, now looking back on it, like the stupid single workout. And to your point, like I would do anything possible to like, you know, how am I getting the best score? To where it got to the point where, you know, necessarily share scores with each other until the end of the day, because it's a huge advantage if you work out at night to know what the morning people got, right? Like, cause you kind of know what the score to beat, you got a rabbit.
Yeah.
So it's funny because that definitely served me then, but I think it also to an extent was a disservice. I think it's a reason why I kind of got injured as much as I did, why I was kind of banged up as much as I did, why probably I didn't progress as much as I would have liked to, because I think that I was so on one end of the spectrum where I could have done a lot better focusing on technique and making sure that everything was moving well and so on and so forth. And now, you know, taking a leaderboard, taking even like the weight on the bar or the weight on the dumbbell out of it, because a big part of bodybuilding style training is that it's so much less about how much you can lift and much more about like how much can you activate the muscle that you're trying to target. So it's just been really good for me because I can still be 100% obsessive. Like I am trying to do this overhead tricep extension to its fullest, but that doesn't mean how fast can I do it. That doesn't mean how much weight is on the bar. That literally means how much do I feel the tricep working? And when you're doing it like that, it is really hard to bang yourself up. And I'm not saying it's for everyone, but it's been a big reason why I don't see myself changing the style of training that I'm doing for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a balance, right? So I train with Hani Rambod and he's like one of the best bodybuilding coaches in the world. And
you gotta give me the intro.
Dude, I was doing like, I don't know. He was having me do something. Right. And he's out in Texas. So I'm boom, 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 boom. And, he's like, dude, like you're not doing it right. And I'm thinking to myself, like, or I was doing dips and I was like, bah, 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 bah. He's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, I was like, oh, I'm trying to get more dips. He's like, dude,
what are you doing? This isn't like, an AMRAP.
This isn't an AMRAP. Like, we're not worried about your, you know, locked out arms and chest below, or, you know, shoulders below your elbows. We're worried about, you know, are you getting maximal contractile potential in the area you're trying to work? And it was definitely an eye-opening experience. I for sure reverted back to my old ways. And, you know, I'd be the first to admit, like, dude, I love smashing it. I love crushing workouts, but I'm becoming more and more aware that if the goal, so if we talk about doing hard workouts, doing things that are difficult, creates a stimulus, which creates an adaptation. Are we doing ourselves a disservice by seeking the easier version of that hard thing? Or should we just try and make that hard thing even harder and get even more stimulus and therefore get even more adaptation? And I know that's like super like, you know, poetry, but it's something I'm thinking about on a regular basis now. It's like, if I'm doing, for example, a shoulder press and I'm trying to cheat I'm trying to use my, you know, low back or whatever as much as I can. What is the goal of the shoulder press? I want to strengthen up my pressing position. So instead, maybe I go a little bit lighter and I really engage the lat on the way down. The goal is not to get as many shoulder presses as I can. The goal is to strengthen the position. I think that's the difference in my mindset, but it's hard for me to shift that after training, after competing for, you know, a decade plus with a different mentality.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that going back to like the Emily example, for example, I think that there's a purpose to both though, right? Like you need to light your hair on fire every now and then and just get after it and not worry about like everything contracting. There's so much benefit to working that anaerobic system and getting some real intensity every now and then. But like everything we've been talking about today, man, it's a balance, right? It's not, you know, lighting your hair on fire every single day. It's not, you know, being perfect form and muscle contraction every single time, unless you have a very specific goal. If you're trying to win the CrossFit Games, you probably have to err on the side over here. If you're trying to get on stage for a bodybuilding show, probably have to err on the side over here. But most people want both. I think that to me is the biggest realization, is that most people aren't going to qualify for the CrossFit Games and have zero interest in getting to the point where they're like 8% body fat and are going to be on a stage.
Right.
You want to look a little bit better and you want to be fit. So your balance, your approach should be somewhere in the middle because you want both, and that's okay.
Yeah. And to be fair, right, from a practical application, if we're talking about specifically, if my goal is to be able to, you know, be out in the real world, be able to protect myself, my family, get after it, et cetera. Like, dude, movement's not going to look perfect. Like I jumped the fence yesterday. My movement did not look like a strict pull-up to a, you know, whatever that leg position would be to, you know, my movement was just what it was. Right. And I think that's a good example of there's a time in the real world where your movement will not look super perfect. And frankly, it probably won't most of the time. But training through different ranges of motion with intention, I think will help you when you want to lift up those other objects or do those other things outside the gym, which is, so again, to your point, it's a balance of both, right? And yeah, it's more of just a mental awareness for me that if I believe that doing hard things creates an adaptation, I shouldn't always be seeking the easiest version of that particular movement.
Sure.
That's a good way to describe it for me.
And I think it's a good takeaway for you. And it's also like, we've talked about this a lot, like how all of us as individuals go through this evolution of our relationship with training. And it happens because our goals change, our circumstances change. We learn more about our bodies and our approach to training. So that'll be ever evolving. But I think that is a good like moment of self-awareness for you, that's an area where you could really improve your approach to training. And it's not going to be the case for everyone, because I would argue that most people maybe aren't, you know,
might be on the other side, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Might not be lighting their hair on fire a lot. I know I'm saying that a lot, but I think it's the best like description of what like real intensity is like, because you're like literally intentionally lighting your hair on fire and then just trying to hold on.
Speaking of lighting your hair on fire, I want to pause this podcast to give a shout out to our newsletter. If this ad is brought to you by our free newsletter, and it is not an ad, but if you're not subscribed to the Never Zero newsletter, you got to be subscribed. Check out the podcast show notes. The Never Zero newsletter has been really cool. We're on edition, like by the time this airs, maybe 6, and we'll be releasing all of them in the future, like on a website. But for now, the sooner you get in, the more editions you get. And each week it's packed with a bunch of ton of value, workouts, things that I'm thinking about, books that I'm reading, you know, et cetera. Speaking of which, I got to show you a new book I just got, but I just got this one in. Turning Feral. After I read this, I'll let you know how it is.
Nice.
Anyways, don't forget the newsletter. Make sure you sign up.
I'm diving into this for my boy, Hormozy.
You're promoting Alex Hormozy in the house. Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. Dude, you got to let me know how that one is too.
Man, that guy is a walking marketing masterclass. It's been really cool to deep dive into a lot of his content. Anyway.
So don't forget to sign up for the newsletter. That's the key takeaway. You know, today I'm actually going to go train with Jacob Heppner. I'm really excited about this, that as part of this podcast, as part of the newsletter, I'm going to try and just continue to explore new things. And Nick Bear, actually, if you guys don't know who that is, check him out. He really inspired me. He did a bodybuilding competition and ran like 100 miles for his 2023 goals, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure those are its two.
That's right.
So I'm thinking to myself now, it's September. I'm thinking, what are my goals going into 2024? What goals do I want to set for myself? And I think for me, I will be doing Nogi Worlds for Jiu-Jitsu in December, which is a big tournament I gotta get ready for. But then next year, I don't know. You're talking about maybe doing a bodybuilding competition.
You heard it here first. Put that out on the podcast. I'm so not committed to that.
Yeah, okay, you're thinking about I'm thinking about maybe a bodybuilding competition. I mean, dude, here's the thing. I turned 38 in like 3 weeks, and someone sent me a message like, hey, you got to put out messaging that people think you go, it's all downhill after 40. And I don't think that's true. Like, I don't think that's true at all.
100% isn't true.
And I feel like I'm almost more jacked. Like, I feel like I could be more jacked at 40 than I was at 33. You know, maybe when I was competing at the CrossFit, you know, I stopped competing at the CrossFit Games like 32 or whatever. So maybe there's a little bit of a balance, but so I'm thinking about the bodybuilding. I'm thinking about the tactical games. I'm thinking about some other stuff. So that's why I'm training with Jacob Heppner today.
Hell yeah, man. I love that, dude. And I love, and this goes back to this idea of like the people you surround yourself with and how much that will either level you up or keep you where you're at. Like every time we talk and I hear you super fired up about like, hey, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that. Like it does like, fuck, man, like what should I do? Maybe I should do this bodybuilding show. So it's cool, man. It's cool. And I hope that people that subscribe to the newsletter and listen to this podcast feel the same way, because you might not have those people in your immediate circle, but I genuinely hope that like listening to us talk about this stuff, sharing some of the stuff that you share in the newsletter serves as that. Like, let us be a part of your circle that, you know, hopefully is like, hey, this thing I've been thinking about doing, like, I think I'm going to fucking do it because Jason's doing all this cool shit. So
yeah, man, I'm always out there trying to learn some new stuff. So today, definitely work in the tactical game side, which I'm excited about. I don't know what to expect. We will see how it goes today. I'll probably put some videos up if I'm allowed to, up online, but yeah, that'd be cool. And, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I know we're coming up to the end of this podcast, and I was going to share this more in the beginning.
I got a Yeti question of the day, bro.
All right, let's do that. I'll save what I was going to say for the next one.
You sure?
We'll start. Yeah, for sure. Cause I think you'll have a whole bunch of questions, and I'd rather us have time to chop about it. I'll keep you with the cliffhanger too.
All right. I like the cliffhanger. Maybe we need to start adding this in. So on the newsletter, by the way, if you guys subscribe, there is a place where you can respond back to me. I do get these newsletters. I love responding back to you. So make sure you check that out. But this gentleman, Kyle, he sent me a message. He says, hey, Jason, any advice? I think this is a really good question. So I want to make sure I acknowledge it. Any advice for an avid CrossFitter hesitant to start jiu-jitsu due to potential injury? My children both do jiu-jitsu and one even competes. So far, I've only spectated. Now, this is a great question in my mind, because obviously this gentleman sees value in having his kids do jiu-jitsu and he's worried about the risk of injury. So to start with, I've been doing jiu-jitsu now for 7 years. Is there more of a risk, in my opinion, to jiu-jitsu getting injured than CrossFit? Yes, I do believe so. I do believe that there is. And the reason for it is probably three reasons. Number one, you have a dynamic partner that you cannot control. That's probably the biggest reason. Number two, you have an ego that's hard for you to control. And number three, you get in more unique positions your body's not as familiar with. So those are like the three reasons why I think jiu-jitsu. But that all being said, you can mitigate those three issues by finding good training partners, learning from a great coach, and potentially even doing privates to start. Once your body gets acclimated to the movements, once you start understanding how to control your body through space, I find the risk of injury is minimal compared to just walking outside and getting injured walking downstairs if you're not staying fit. So I think the risk of injury in jiu-jitsu, if you're a CrossFitter and you're thinking about this, like this gentleman was, I think you should probably put that aside. There's a risk of injury in everything. I can get injured walking on the stairs. I can get injured at this tactical thing today. I can get injured doing anything. If I think about it too much, it's just gonna cause me to never do anything physical, which is not the way I want to live my life. But the bigger thing that I think is interesting here is that your children are doing jiu-jitsu. So if you see value enough to have your children do it, you also want to lead by example and show them that you're doing it as well. I think that by doing that, it'll help with the longevity for your children doing something that I think is incredibly powerful for them. So my answer to this would be start with private, start slow, check your ego, find a great coach, just like you would at a CrossFit gym. The risk of injury will really be dependent on the training partners you have and your ability to chill. But the number one thing that I would say to this gentleman is, if you got your kids doing it, you got to back it up too, because that's going to help them know that you don't just talk about it, you are about it.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think you nailed hit the nail on the head. You know, I haven't fully dived into the jiu-jitsu world yet. Although, you know, given how much time I spend with Jason now, I feel like it's just inevitable once the circumstances are right.
Bring your gi on Tuesday, buddy. Bring your gi on Tuesday.
Dude, but honestly, like I would have the same, I mean, not would, I have the same concern as the guy who asked the question. It's a big hesitation for me because, like I was sharing before, like I'm not the kind of person that can check my ego out the door easily. I'm getting better at it. It's definitely an area that I've been actively working on. But like, if I'm going in there, I'm immediately measuring myself against the other guys that are in there. And I immediately want to be the guy that like, oh, like you just started doing this, and kind of like surprise people a little bit. Like, because I feel like I've been able to do that in most things. And I don't know how I would handle not being able to be that guy. So dude, I get it. But I think that your answer about like, you know, being intentional with the training partners that you have, finding a good coach, starting with privates, right? Like starting with something where you have a base knowledge of how to move and maybe what to expect and when to know that like, hey, the training partner that I'm with, like, is putting me in like unsafe scenarios, like getting that base knowledge in a very safe environment, which would be a private with a good coach. That to me makes a lot of sense. Like, I think the answer is a perfect answer. And I too, like the guy who asked the question, like there is no doubt in my mind that Shay, our 9-month-old, will be signed up for some sort of probably BJJ. You know, like I see the value in it 100%, but I also, where I am and my experience with injuries and like where I'm at with my training and how much it like matters to me to just be 100% pain-free is a big reason why I'm hesitant to do it, even though I see the value for my kids. So I appreciate you answering the question, because I think that it's, if I were, you know, thinking about it, it's exactly the question that I would have, and almost being exactly the scenario as the guy who asked it.
100%. And just so we're perfectly clear, I think this gentleman and you have a viable, like have a reasonable concern. You do. But I'd also ask the question, and you might, you know, you were young and so was I, but like when you first started CrossFit, if you're newer to CrossFit, like in the last 5 years, how many people told you that CrossFit was dangerous? Then you went and you found a coach, you found a community, you started off slow, and now you love it. I think a lot of people would say that CrossFit's dangerous. I actually think more people would say CrossFit's dangerous than more people would say jiu-jitsu is dangerous, in my opinion, who don't know about either one of them, right? Who just like have like this stigma behind it. But you chose to do CrossFit and you've had life-changing results. My recommendation is take the same approach you did when you started CrossFit, right? Find a great coach, find a great community, start slow. But the biggest difference between CrossFit and jiu-jitsu is you will have a training partner. So you need to make sure you communicate well with that person. And you must not hit the mats if you're going to have an ego about it. If you're going to be that guy, then just don't even get on it, because it's not going to be good for your training partner. It won't be good for you. And for that reason alone, some of the most humble people I've ever met are in jiu-jitsu. You know, I just got back from Maine with 500 jiu-jitsu practitioners. And these guys, they humble themselves every day, because you might think you're the top dog. There's always someone's going to come and kick your ass. So that's my motivation for today.
I love that, man. I love that. And I appreciate the guy who asked that question, because I can resonate with where he's at big time, especially with the whole like, of course, I'm going to sign up my kid to do this, but am I going to do it? Maybe.
Yeah, dude. Walk the walk, talk the talk, especially with something like that. And you could also be doing it with them over time in the garage. Bro, hell yeah. You know what I mean? Hell yeah. Well, yeah. That's all I got, man. That's what I got. I mean, I'm curious, but you're leaving us with a cliffhanger. We got a good episode coming up next week. I think it's Rich Froning, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't want to give it away. I just gave it away.
I think so. And I think you did.
But I think I just gave it away. And I think, yeah, I think it is Rich Froning. Make sure to check out the newsletter. Make sure to check out all the podcast show notes. And my final little thing, if you're listening to this, you're on a car ride, you're doing whatever, hit us up online, you know, leave us a, like do a little screen grab. If you're on Spotify, whatever, hit us up on social media. I love hearing from you guys. Happens a lot, but it could happen more. So just share it on stories. I get tagged in it. It's really meaningful to us. And that's all I got, brother. Well, on behalf of myself, Gabe Yanez, and all of us here at, well, I guess the NC Fit crew and just everybody, I hope you guys have a kick-ass day. Keep leading from the front and hopefully go try some jiu-jitsu. Let's go.
I put a lot of work into this background. So go check it out on YouTube and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Just look at it. You don't have to watch the whole thing. Just look at it.
Just please. Take a screen grab and look at Gabe for the rest of your day. Later.